All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster women's rugby. Never stop competing.
So the Women's Rugby World Cup gets underway on Friday week in England. Ireland are back in the competition for the first time since 2017 after they missed out, of course, in 2022. And they're going to be up against Japan, Spain and New Zealand in Pool C. Now, the first time Ireland participated in this competition was in 1994. It was the second time the Women's Rugby World Cup had ever been held. And it's a remarkable story on so many levels. So I'm really pleased that Raeltine Shreeves, who played on that Ireland team, is with us on the line. Raeltine, good to chat to you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very well. And really interested to learn a little bit more about the 1994 World Cup. As I'm sure you're aware and plenty of our listeners are aware, there is limited information out there. So we will get into that. But I think it would be amiss of me to not start chronologically in terms of your sporting career, Raeltine. Football was your first love and it was a pretty remarkable career before you got into rugby as well. So tell us a little bit about the footballer, Raeltine Shreeves.
Yeah, I started playing for football back in 1981 and I started playing for Millwall Lionesses. And we did pretty okay. I'll never forget, we played in this tournament called the Metropolitan Police Five-A-Side Tournament and the final was at Wembley Arena. And one thing that stays with me is the fact that we actually won it and we actually got to meet Bobby Robson and I've got a photo of me and him. And it was when you meet someone like that, you're just like, yeah, you know, but obviously as time goes on, it's one of those moments that you actually treasure because he was such a gentleman of the game. Then obviously later on, we did actually get to our first FA Cup final. Now, I spoke to Cameron Hill last week and there's a bit of, I need to clear up a statistic there. I wasn't actually captain. I was captain of the reserve team and actually got selected for the squad.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I didn't actually get on a play. I was on the subs bench, but we did win it 1-0. So,
does that mean that you have a cup medal or were these days where...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, we got a cup medal. So, and it's funny because a few years back, Hope Powell was a really good friend of mine who obviously played for Millwall Lionesses and then obviously England and then was England manager. A few years ago, they were trying to sort out their statistics and trying to sort out who was on the bench. And that's what currently that's what we're doing at the moment. Lynn Campwell has set up this big WhatsApp group to try and get all the history in place, which is fantastic and should be acknowledged, obviously.
And badly needed as well. As I mentioned there, it's not exactly easy to find information about your team. Just on that, there, a couple of things there. So Millwall Lionesses, when you first started, was it an 11-a-side team that played in a 5-a-side tournament or was it the 5-a-side?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we were an 11-a-side team and that particular year we played in lots of 5-a-side tournaments. We played both. So it was more, obviously, during the winter and spring months, it was 11-a-side and towards the latter end, it was summer months, it was 5-a-side. But this was something that we'd done. We were only, I think I was only about 15 or 16, so we were quite young at the time. Yeah.
What was it like playing for the female team of Millwall? Like 1980s, early 90s, the men's club doesn't exactly have a great reputation in terms of, its fan groups would have been viewed as quite a racist subculture of English football. So to have a women's team feels unbelievably forward thinking and actually at odds with what I would think about Millwall. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as I said, we were youngsters when we first started out. I mean, I think I was only about 14 when I started playing. I didn't even know that women's football teams existed. It was through chance that myself and my sister fell into it. We just so happened to meet someone that lived locally and we found out this person's name, went along and said, we want to play. So, yeah, I mean, but there was no tie. There was no link there, you know. It was completely separate from the men's team. It was just... I mean, again, I don't know how far back Millwall Lionesses go, but the people that founded the team obviously played near Millwall, but we ended up in Eltham. And yeah, adopted the name of, obviously, Millwall Lionesses. I mean, it was later on, we did play a few fixtures before the cup final at Millwall, and the link started to grow then when they had their community scheme. But yeah, there wasn't a massive link at all in the beginning.
And the community scheme, I guess, was in many ways set up to try and repair the image of Millwall as a football club as well. So I'm sure that was probably part of their thinking. Well, I presume it was largely football only for you growing up, Raelteen. I mean, did rugby ever play a part in your childhood, or was that very much something that came into your life later?
No, I mean, initially myself and my sister, we first got into swimming, and then we moved from Bermondsey up to Blackheath, and we met people up there. So we were still swimmers, but we moved from swimming into football. I mean, it was like when we lived on the estate in Bermondsey, it was just like myself and my sister and our friends just used to kick the ball around with the boys, you know, that was it. And it was funny because later on, my sister actually went out and played football in Italy, in Salerno, when I went to university. But it was always me looking at the football. My sister would run in, have a look and see what they were doing, then run out, you know, because she wasn't really into it. But what amazed me, one thing that did amaze me, and this will always stick with me, was when I used to watch, if the football wasn't on, the rugby sometimes would be on, and I didn't understand the laws. My dad was a footballer as well and a cricketer, so he didn't understand the laws of the game. But what used to amaze me was the kicking, you know, when they used to kick the conversions or the penalty. I used to think, wow, that's unbelievable. How did that player manage? You know, that used to really, that really captured me, you know. And then obviously to think many years later, I actually end up kicking myself, you know, the conversions and penalties and whatnot. So that stayed with me. I just thought it was fantastic to see those, to see that, you know, ball go through there. I just thought it was a hell of a skill at that very young age, you know. So that was the only ever time really that rugby touched me that I actually thought, oh, I don't understand it, you know. One of my friends, Livy Hughes, her sister started playing for Bromley, and this was when I was still playing football. And she told me, oh, my sister started to play rugby for a team called Bromley, which later became Blackheath, which is the club that I initially joined. And I was thinking, women playing rugby? Never heard of that. You know, it was so bizarre. But obviously there was this other world out there where women did play rugby, you know. But it's quite a few years behind football, and it's still a few years behind. But, you know, they're catching up. The Red Roses are catching up the Lionesses, but they've got a way to go. But it's building. Women's sport is building, you know.
Talk to us about how you bridge the gap from saying women's rugby, women playing rugby, that's very unusual, to actually picking up a ball and playing yourself. How long does that take?
Oh, well, I just see what happened is back in 91 when we won the FA Cup final, there's a lot of us that weren't too happy with the way the club was going, so a lot of us left the club. So in between, we created a new club. And that was called Bromley. And meantime, I ended up at Blackheath Rugby Cup, and I was introduced to all the women there. And they just said to me, look, come along for a session. So I went along, and it was, I don't know, I just took to it naturally, you know. I know, it just seemed something that was always there with me. I don't know. You know, it was, I don't know. I don't know if you call me a natural ball player, but yeah, it was great. Loved it. You know, loved all the skills. Didn't have a clue what the laws of the game were, but obviously knew I had to pass behind. But yeah, it was once I got hooked. Once I went along to a couple of sessions, I just got hooked. So, and the rest they say is history. So, yeah,
it's amazing.
I didn't find it hard at all.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, like, the year you guys win the cup is 1991, which incidentally is the same year as the first ever Women's Rugby World Cup. Had you any idea that the Women's Rugby World Cup was happening in 1991, for example?
Yes. Okay. Because we had two players that that were in that World Cup, and I just started playing rugby in 91. And I think it was in the, I'm not sure what month it was, but the Edwards sisters, Jackie Edwards and Maxine Edwards. Now, I can't remember whether Maxine played in the end. Yeah, I think she did. Anyway, we had the two Edwards sisters. I didn't actually go and watch any of the games, but I knew it was happening. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you know about those four women that got it off the ground, yeah?
Yeah, go ahead for people who aren't aware of the story.
Right, okay. So that's Debbie Griffin, Sue Dorrington, Alice Cooper and Mary Forsyth. And the book that they wrote is called The World in Her Hands, and huge effort by them, because I remember speaking to Sue, well, a few years back when we actually bumped into each other, would you believe it or not, in New Zealand at the last World Cup. And I said, I read it and I couldn't believe what they actually put themselves through and the courage that they showed and the bravery to actually get it off the ground. And, you know, it has to start somewhere. And, you know, they were just really tenacious women to just say, we're going to do it, you know. And all of those four women, their stories are all so interesting, you know, because they come from different parts of rugby, and they all did different jobs within setting up the first World Cup.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And to go up against officialdom and the suits, the blazers of IRB / World Rugby as it's known today at that point, the first World Cup was not sanctioned by the IRB, nor was the second World Cup, which leads to a complicated situation regarding where it was going to be hosted. But before we get to that, when do you get the call from Ireland, or whatever the communication method was, and when do you start to realise that actually you're going to be able to put on an international jersey?
Well, it was Catherine Hennessy. I played with her at Blackheath, and she was trying to encourage me to move from, you know, trying to go through the English ranks to the Irish, because I was still going down the road of playing for divisional and trying to get into the England team. And she said, oh, look, they're doing trials for Ireland. And I said, no, I'm still going down the England route. So anyway, after that, obviously come 94, we know there's going to be another World Cup. One of my coaches encouraged me. He said, look, you don't know how long you've got in this game. Not that that was that old. It was about 27, 28. But you just don't know what's around the corner. And he said, "What? Go and try out for Ireland. Because there's a few people in front of you yet, Raoul-teen." And I was actually still playing fullback at the time, not scrum half. So I went for the trials in 93, I think around Christmas time. And it was Irish Exiles against the Irish Counties. And I managed to get selected. And the first international for Ireland was held in Scotland in 93, 14th of February. And then the second international was held at Ravenhill, which was Kingspan, which I believe now is called a Vivida or something. It's changed again.
Has it changed again?
yeah, it's changed again. And the women played there on Saturday or Sunday against Canada. Yeah, it's changed again. It's sponsorship, isn't it? So anyway, it's Ravenhill to me. So we play our second international against Scotland and we lose 5-0, but I was terrified. Because you just don't know what to expect. And they scored a try within the first 5 minutes and it was an onslaught. And I just thought, oh, we're going to get mullered. So it's going to be a cricket score. Because you just don't know what you're letting yourself in for, you know? So, and it wasn't the most organised in terms of having a training session beforehand. We were billeted, at, you know, in different people's homes. I think John Etheridge was a coach. Plus there was Des Byrne helped out as well. He was assistant. And we didn't have... I don't even think we had a physio. I think Fiona Steed used to help us on that scale, but that's when she really came into her own in 94 in the World Cup, Fiona Steed, because we didn't have one then and she became our physio for that tournament. But yeah, that's how, you know, you obviously when you're starting and you're pioneers, you've got to start from somewhere. And I forget, it was just lashing of rain and cold day. And the team photograph, we didn't have a proper one, but the team photograph, I distinctly remember Gilly Scott, our winger, is on the end and you can just see how cold she is, you know. It was an experience. There weren't many people there. And I actually, you know, I was so emotional after the game. I was in tears, basically. And I think, as I said, it was a big moment. But there wasn't that many people there to see it. But it's your first cap, you know, it's your first international, it's your first little taste of you don't know what's to come. So, yeah, I think it was a relief as well, you know. But we had a good drink with the Scots afterwards, a good party, good chat. And, so it was a great experience. So
that's such an amazing story. And look, it's obviously something that's significant at this juncture, given we are doing this piece and we're really interested in what happened there. It seems, given the emotion that you describe after that game, that you too were also quite aware for you personally how important this moment was, but also maybe for the sport of rugby for Irish women, because as you pointed out there, this is the first couple of tests. This is the beginning of a long story for Irish women in rugby. So there seemed to be like a great appreciation of that within your squad.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, I didn't play in a 93, and fair play to the women that did. And, you know, so I was only on like the second, you know, it was their second caps. It was my first. So they gave me a bit of like of a heads up of what to expect. But you just don't know. You don't know what you're going into. It's like a, not a cauldron, but, you know, it's a massive step up from club rugby. And we knew, we all started talking about the World Cup. And that was the thing. It was like, right, the World Cup's in 94. So this is what we're gaining momentum for. This is why we're having these friendlies to get ready to have, you know, to get a few more games before we actually go and compete against the best in the world. And then I was talking to Cameron last week. You know Cameron Hill, yeah?
Yeah, Cameron and Holly, yeah.
Yeah, so we had our first, our third international at Black Rock, and that was against Wales. And we lost 20-3. But we did manage to get 3 points. They were our first points, and it was I was the kicker, obviously, on that day. And all the girls was like, "It's like opt for go for points." Even though we knew we'd lost a game, there was only about 10 minutes to go. We thought it was important to get points on the board, and we did. And it was fantastic because you'd think we'd won the World Cup. You'd be celebrated, you know, because it was an awful day. But anyway, I managed to slot it. And again, we had a great dinner with the Welsh.
Was it a penalty, Raelty, and drop goal?
It was a penalty. I've never ever scored a drop goal in the whole time I played rugby. I was gutted. You can't really at scrum half, which is where I predominantly play. Well, you can, but it's difficult. But no, it was a penalty, and fair play to the Irish Exiles, because when we flew back to London, they actually borrowed the points, physically got the points from Black Rock.
All right.
And actually gave them to me when we got back. And they very proudly sit on my memorabilia wall, which, you know, one day I'll have to return those to Black Rock, I'm sure.
Not at all. Hold on to that. Sell it for big money. It's more than just a quiz question. Who was the first person to score points for the Ireland women's rugby team? Yeah. Raelteen Shreves is the answer if that quiz question ever comes up. People might be... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's what I'm saying. I bore people to death, especially my other half, who goes, "Oh, you didn't tell them that story again, did you?" I said, "Yeah, I'm afraid I did, you know."
I presume, Raelteen, for you, so, like, I mean, people with a keen ear for Irish would be able to tell that your first name is an Irish translation of Little Star.
That's right.
I presume, is it an Irish mother, English father, or does it go back a generation beyond that?
No, it's my mum. My mum's from Dublin.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was, she nicked it from her sister, my auntie. My auntie Faye, she was pregnant at the same time, but she had a boy. So mum said to her, "Look, can I nick Raelteen?" Because my auntie Faye was always going to have the name Raelteen. She had a daughter.
Okay.
So my mum poached her name. It's anglicised. It's not spelled correctly in the Gaelic way.
Yeah.
So I had this conversation with my mum, and she said, "We'll change it." And I'm like, "Mum, I'm not going to change my name after 58 years because people just about can spell it now. So it's phonetically the way it's pronounced, you know."
You've saved yourself a lot of administrative hassle in the UK by going down that road. So it's totally forgivable. Mm. Bring us on to the World Cup then in 1994. You talk about the focus being on the World Cup in 1994 after your first cap, the second ever game for Ireland. Mm. It almost, very nearly, does not happen. Talk to us about your experience of the drama before the 1994 World Cup.
Yeah, so this is nuts. So we're preparing both in England and Ireland, predominantly Ireland, obviously, but there were a few sessions because we were paying to play, and which was never a big deal. But, you know, we thought it, you know, we had a few sessions at London Irish just to help some of the exiles out, because if you didn't have the money, basically, you wouldn't be able to play, right?
Yeah.
So we're getting really excited and we're preparing, and then we just hear this call that, Netherlands are not going to host it. They've dropped out. And we're like, really? We were gutted. And then we hear, but the Scottish are picking it up. And we're like, that's great. Yeah. We're going. So one minute, you know, we're obviously deflated. And then it's like, no, we're going. Fantastic. So we continue our sessions, continue building the momentum, getting in as many training sessions in before. And then we hear... then I get a call from Joanne Moore. And again, I love telling this story. Joanne Moore phones me up and she says, Routine, the Irish Women's Rugby Football Union, I got this wrong before because we weren't part of the men's union, but the Irish Women's Rugby Football Union are not going to support us. They're not going to, you know, give us their tick, if you like. And I said, right. She said, but are you still willing to go? I said, oh, absolutely. No doubt. I've already booked me 2 weeks off work. I'm there. Yeah, I'm on the train up there or on the plane. But I think also Joanne, I think, I don't know who else, but she must have phoned loads of players. But she was the main driving force behind it, as far as I was concerned, because she called me. And that was it. You know, I think obviously during that time, we were all like, yeah, we're still going. Doesn't matter. And we didn't even think about the repercussions. We just thought, this is too big a thing. We have to go to this to continue the momentum. Many years later, we probably realised how big a shift that would have been and what a game changer it would have been. But it was so important because who knows where the Irish team would be now, you know?
100%. So the Dutch Women's Rugby Football Union was integrated with the Men's Rugby Union, which was actually quite futuristic at the time in 1994. So given the IRB would not sanction a Women's Rugby World Cup, therefore the Netherlands pulled out of hosting it, but the Scots were separate. What I'm interested in there is the Irish Women's Rugby Football Union not giving you their support. I would have thought that they were not integrated with the IRFU at that point.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, this is a bit hazy and you know, whoever's listening out there, the Joanne Moores of the world may be correcting me with this, but from what I can remember, because it's a long time ago now, it was just a matter of, well, we don't care that we're not getting the support. But believe it or not, in the end, once we actually got to Scotland and we got the squad up there, they started to support us. They gave us their blessing.
Okay, I see. Right.
Yeah. And I don't want to name names in case I get them wrong.
Yeah.
But I think it's all a bit naive, and it wasn't so much, oh, we're going to hold the girls back, but a bit like, oh, we don't know what we're letting ourselves in for. But we just thought, well, we're going to go.
Yeah.
And so I think we actually did get their blessing in the end, the Irish Women's Rugby Football Union. So they're on board. They didn't have a choice, did they?
Yeah. But I presume there's a lot of double jobbing around that time. Like you talk about Fiona Steed double jobbing as a physiotherapist. But what about like your logistics manager at that point? If you don't have the support of some suits back in Dublin, I presume you're booking your own accommodation. You're up there for two weeks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You've got to look after everything.
Yeah, absolutely. It all came out of our own pockets, but you don't care. You're just so excited. You're at a World Cup, you know, this major event. All right, there's nothing on telly. No one really, but we know about it. We're competing, you know. All right, it's not. And then we hear it, obviously, it wasn't sanctioned by the IRB. Again, it's like, so we're going to go out there and play. It's our World Cup. And lo and behold, years later, they have sanctioned it. And it is like, you said, how dare they? You know, it's like, those women, as I said, back in 91, they've got the first one going, now this one. Again, it's the 10th one this year, isn't it, the World Cup? So it's, you know, it's wonderful, again, that the bravery of people, of the women, to just say, yeah, well, we're going to go and play. We love the game. We're just going to go and play the tournament. So, yeah.
When it comes to the games at this World Cup, so the Scottish students team entered it, I presume in lieu of, say, the Netherlands and also New Zealand, who were not sanctioned to play in this tournament, and you were drawn in the same pool of Scottish students. So this was your first game. So Ireland had a 100% record coming out of their first game in the Women's World Cup. You beat them on an 18-5 scoreline.
That's right.
What do you remember from that game?
Sorry?
What do you remember from that game?
Oh, right. You know what? I don't even remember the team pick, but I got one of the girls to put it on there and I was like, I don't remember it being taken. I think we were just so excited and I said, a lot of years gone past now. But, it was great. You know, all right, it was Scottish students, but I'm sure we had our green shirts on. As far as we were concerned, it was us playing for Ireland, yeah, because we had the green jerseys on. There may have been Scottish students. And it was we got our first try. Vicky McDonald scored our first try for Ireland that day, and I know that what they're saying is they're not gonna honour it as a cap game because it wasn't against an international side. But as I always say to the girls and anyone that will listen, I don't care. For me, it was a cap. For me, it was because I played. You know, I had my Irish shirt on. I sang the national anthem, and you know, There we go. But I don't suppose anyone higher up will recognise it. But I think we all do. When, you know, all of us that played. Yeah, and it was great because we were like, yeah, great win. You know, against students, but it's a win. Builds momentum yet again. But then we played the French afterwards, and again, Owen, we were looking at these French team play. I can't remember who else was in the group, and I was looking at them, and I was thinking, they don't seem that great. We can, yeah, we're all these. we got beat 31-0. I sound naive, you know, but you know, I'm always one for being positive, and that.
Yeah,
you can overcome big obstacles.
I'm not sure if it, according to Wikipedia anyway, I would bow to your superior knowledge, but I think it might have just been a three-team pool. So I think France were obviously up against the Scottish students before you played France. So yeah, France were in a very, very good place at that point. They won comfortably. And then the United States of America, who were world champions and would get to the final, were your quarter-final opponents. Actually, on YouTube, the English Rugby Union has put up the full match of the USA versus England in that year's Rugby World Cup final, and it's an amazing watch. It really, really is. So
you would come up. I've watched it.
Yeah, it's it's fascinating. There's also a report from the BBC, a 6-minute report from the 1991 Rugby World Cup, the inaugural Rugby World Cup, which is also absolutely phenomenal as well. Even the stories of the Soviets coming over and having to barter their way to the actual venues. It's really rich, the colour and the stories from it. So that sends you into a Shields competition, losing to the United States in a quarter final.
We played Scotland and we lost in the I don't know, but we did play Scotland and we lost 10-3 at Melrose, I think it was. And then we played the States.
Yeah. Or was the Scotland game actually in the Shield, potentially? Was that a semi-final, which then sent you to a game against Japan for third place in the Shield?
Well, I can't remember which way around it was. But yeah, we definitely did play the States and we definitely played, obviously, Scotland, then Japan. But yeah, I can't remember which way around. But yeah, it was obviously when we heard that we had to play the States, that was... we were gulping because they were the world champions. But it was great that we had the opportunity to play against them. I mean, obviously, they were setting the benchmark. And yes, it was a heavy defeat, 76-0. But you got to look at their history compared to ours. And we were, you know, it was, you know, quote, girls against women, as it were. You know, we were very... we're new to it, weren't we, as an international side? So
that's the United States so far ahead at that point, given a lot of them would have been collegiate athletes, a lot of them would have been, you know, essentially semi-professional athletes in a range of other sports as well. And then they come together, and the physical domination, I think, was a really big thing of those early years for the United States before everybody else could catch up. So first Rugby World Cup for the Ireland women's team ends in a third place finish in the Shields competition. You beat Japan in that third place playoff. What's that feeling like coming away from Ireland's first ever World Cup? Is it joy and like in the fact that you've ended it on a high note by winning that game against Japan? What's the emotion?
It was fantastic. It was fantastic beating the Japanese. I think, again, I've got it in my stats here. Let me see, Japan. Yeah, we won 11-0. But no, it was great coming away with a win. But it was a shame, really, Owen, because at the end, when we had a massive dinner with all the other teams, that obviously we went then obviously to watch the following day England play against the States. But then there was a big, massive dinner for all the teams. It was all big presentations, sing songs. But from an Irish point of view, it was quite fragmented because some players had to go back for their jobs, you know, so we didn't get that euphoria moment where we were all together celebrating the end of the tournament. You know, as I said, I mean, I think that night when we beat the Japanese, we did all go out and celebrate. But it was a shame that we didn't all finish the tournament together as a unit. But then you can understand that people had other commitments and had to go back and, you know, go back to what? Back to reality.
Yeah. What was reality for you after that? Was there more caps, more engagement with the Ireland rugby team, or was 94 very much the peak?
No, I went and played in the 98 one as well.
Okay, right.
So, yeah. So after that, the momentum builds. I think we play about 3 or 4 more games in 95. One of the fondest games that I remember was when we played against... in 96 against, obviously, England, where they're the world champions, and it was at London Irish, and it was on St. Patrick's Day. And we lost 42 points to 8, But a lot of my, I was playing for Wasps at the time, and a lot of my teammates for Wasps were playing in your position. And they actually billeted us the following night, but not the night before. But it was just a brilliant day, because although we lost 42-8, my dad was in the stands, and he said, when you got that try at the end, it was like you'd won the game. Everyone was cheering. And even though there was English and Irish supporters in the stands, they were just cheering for us, you know, because they wanted us to see us score this try. And we pulled off this move. It was called the Guinness move. And it's where you pull a load of backs from one side to pitch the other. And Lita Deirdre, who's my one of my good pals on the team, Deirdre Fitzgerald, it was her that scored the try. And it was me. I set the court and I ran around, and actually I'd like to think that I set her up. But yeah. Anyway, she scored the try. And the move was fantastic, because you could just see the English thinking, what's going on? They were totally confused with it. And we scored a try, and I've got a nice picture up on the wall of Dee giving me a big hug and Diane Nixon. But it was just a fantastic... It was just a brilliant day, because, as you can imagine, St. Patrick's Day, London Irish, we knew, you know, most people knew each other. And then obviously great sit-down meal afterwards, great party. And then we went back to Giselle Mather, who's now Giselle Pragnell. We stayed at her house tonight with myself and Carol Ann Byrne and a couple of the other Waspies, like Paula George and that. So we stayed with her, the opposition, which obviously you wouldn't do these days, but... That's how it was back in then. And so that was in 96. And then again in 90, we play a few games in 96. Then in 97, we go to the Euros in 97, which we're still trying to collate all the information from and all the caps and make sure, you know, all the players that were capped are actually recognised.
Yeah.
That's still going through. And then obviously then... Before you know it, the 98 World Cup's upon us, and it is actually in the Netherlands this time. And... Little did I know, but that was going to be my last time playing for Ireland when we played against Kazakhstan, and that was in the plate final or the shield final or something like that. But yeah. Again, a totally different experience. But as I say, if I digress and go back to the 94 World Cup, again, it was Fiona Steed that was our physio. This World Cup in 98, obviously we had a physio, we had a manager, we had a kit person, you know, it was different altogether, much more professional. Yeah. Than the 94. So obviously the learning curve, massive.
It does take a while after that rail scene for recognition to actually come. You mentioned the IRB recognising the 1994 World Cup in an international sense, but it also takes a while for the IRFU to recognise your contributions to Irish rugby as well. In fact, it's 20 years after that second World Cup for Ireland where you guys are all invited to Lansdowne Road, I think it is, for a ceremony.
Aviva Stadium, yeah?
Yeah. And I think we're at 111.
Oh, yeah, it is Lansdowne Road. Keep changing their names.
Yeah, exactly. yourself and 111 former Ireland players all receiving your caps on the same day in 2018. That must have been an unbelievably special moment.
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, there was players that I hadn't seen in years. And you know what, Owen? It was just like I'd seen them yesterday. Uh-huh. It was fantastic. And then, we had one night to celebrate. I know, I think there were some of us that met up the night before, but we needed at least 2 weeks to catch up on each other's lives. But no, it was fantastic. It was like, you know, time hadn't passed. And like just remembering all the stories and certain players saying to me, oh, do you remember this? I'm like, oh, no, I forgot about that. No, it was absolutely fantastic. And I think it was Nora Stapleton that had a big hand in that. And I think also Sinead Cosgrove. Is it Cosgrove or Cosgrave? Sinead Cosy, as they call her.
Yeah.
She had a big hand in that. So they really, you know, put the weight behind that to get that, you know, recognised, you know, and a lot of work. I know a huge amount of work went into that to get those players there, because obviously it's getting names, getting addresses. So yeah, it was fantastic. It was just wonderful to celebrate. Not just, I mean, because at the same time they celebrated the first women that played for Ireland in 93, and quite rightly so. And then all these other years that, you know, all these other players, you know, ourselves included, that followed. And it was important because. My other half, James, kept saying, when are you going to get your Irish caps? You need to start a movement going. And lo and behold, I already knew that movement had already started growing anyway. So, and a funny story and a great character, Therese Kennedy, JC. We nicknamed her JC at the 94 World Cup. Don't ask me why, but she can tell you the story when you meet her.
Right.
It's a great story. But anyway, JC. So she says, years later, she wrote to the Irish Women's the Irish Rugby Football Union, I think, when they affiliated and everything, and asked for a cap. She said they sent me a baseball cap. It's the way she tells the story. I mean, it was like, really? But yeah, so I've obviously got my cap. It's all mounted and in a box. And yeah, it's huge. It was huge to get that. And it was, you can imagine, we got kicked out of the Aviva, not early. I mean, unfortunately that day, Ireland women were playing, the current squad were playing back in 2018 against Scotland, but the Scotland beat the Irish, unfortunately. But that didn't spoil the party. And it was great, again, to meet the new players. And I'd always go up and introduce myself. And I think a lot of players go, oh, yeah, yeah. I think they don't remember me, but might know the name because it's an unusual name.
Yeah.
But... yeah, so I'd always make the effort to try and do that, but we end up in a pub across the road singing songs as you do till about 2 or 3 in the morning. But no, it was huge, you know. It was important. It's important, you know.
It really is, because I think there's obviously a recent level of success with regards to, you know, the Grand Slam and beating the Black Ferns, which is rightly celebrated. But I think if you were to delve back further into history and ask people about the first women to play rugby for Ireland and those first few teams, that first World Cup, people will draw a blank. So, you know, 2018 should be the beginning of a quest for greater recognition for you guys, I reckon. And it's clearly ongoing, as you've mentioned there, some of your former teammates are trying to collate stats and information, and they are difficult to find, but I'm sure there will be a greater appreciation out there when that work is completed.
It's ongoing.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
Sorry if I can interject. I mean, the analogy I make, Owen, is like, look at the Lionesses, what they've done again this year. I mean, it's huge. But it's great how, again, they're trying to remember their history, because they were, you know, women were banned for 50 years in this country, you know. And they're trying to look at the lost Lionesses and get those women recognised and get them their caps. And now they're like VIPs when they go and watch the Lionesses. And so they should be. You know, the history is so important, and it's so important that people know where they've come from, you know, where it's all come from, you know, because it, you know, you can put the pieces together then and understand the bigger picture.
Will you be venturing to a couple of the games over the next few weeks?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Look, so I've got me,
got the Irish jersey on.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Got me World Cup one this time. So yes, I will be going to the opening game at Sunderland to watch the England against the Americans. And then I'm going to, on the way back down, I'm going to be watching obviously Ireland against Japan. I don't know if I'm going to be going to the second one, but I'm hoping to get to the New Zealand one.
Big one.
But I've got a big do the night before, so we'll see how we go. But yeah, I'll try and get to more, but and then obviously from the quarter semis, I don't know.
Yeah, well, listen, if you can go easy on the do the night before, get yourself down to Brighton for Ireland versus the Black Ferns. That is hopefully going to be a signature game from the pool stages. You have been listening to Raelteen Treves, the kicker of Ireland's first ever points in women's rugby. And Raelteen, it's been a pleasure chatting to you and learning a little bit more about this story. And I'm sure there are plenty more pieces for us to do over the coming years to learn a bit more about you and your teammates. But Raelteen, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Owen. Thanks for taking time out.
Off the Ball, GAA.
Ultimately, Galway were the better team, and that's why I'm sitting here not disappointed so much, because the best teams have to win All Irelands, and that's why Galway are with the Cup this morning.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.